You might have heard a few people say, maybe yourself even, that growing up is always tough. There is no smooth arc from birth to adulthood. Everybody's going to trip and fall once in a while, figuratively as well as literally. Today's guest is all about getting up from that fall and moving forward once again. Peggy Caruso's book is called Revolutionize Your Child's Life, A Simple Guide to the Health, Wealth, and Welfare of Your Child. Peggy Caruso is an executive and personal development coach who certifies other life coaches. She's appeared on the radio a number of times, is the author of several books. Her website is lifecoachingandbeyond.com. Peggy Caruso, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you. One of the things I notice in your credits is you're listed as an NLP master practitioner. This is neuro-linguistic programming?
Yes, it is.
Give us a little thumbnail sketch there, if you would.
Neuro-linguistic programming is so beneficial. It's beneficial for adults and children, but really in children, because it's tools and techniques that you use to help them modify behavioral patterns. So it helps me identify what patterns need change, and then it helps you to go ahead and change them.
And so it's it's tied in with language and its usage?
Yes. Linguistics is the language, and programming, is, of course, is your pattern. So it helps you, modify those places that you see need modified.
I notice a trend in book titles here. Our previous book was Revolutionize Your Life, and now you're talking about revolutionizing your child's life. So it takes the focus from the self to the kids now in this case.
Yes, and I have a third book coming out, Revolutionize Your Corporate Life, because I do executive coaching and personal development.
And so what was it, what sent you in the direction of doing a book about kids?
Well, I deal with children on a daily basis, and there's so many negativities in today's society, as you know. And so I help a lot of kids with those negative occurrences, such as bullying, cutting, social media issues, internet safety. And I help turn that around, because all negative influences need a positive intervention. And so because I'm an eight-time entrepreneur, I instill entrepreneurial skills in children, help them become kidpreneurs, find their talents and abilities.
Not necessarily in a business sense, but just finding what it is they're good at?
No, I actually do teach entrepreneurial skills. I'll give you an example. I had a little girl that came in, and she had a very severe case of bullying. And then, we went on and redirected after we helped her with those issues to redirect to a positive and start thinking entrepreneurial. She loved horses, so everyone thought she was going to be a horse trainer. But when I did a Discover Your Skill Set exercise, I found out she was very artistic. So I bought her a program, How to Become a Cartoonist, and she's now building a business.
Wow. At what age?
13.
Wow. That's quite something.
Yeah.
So there's an important concept early in the book, and it's the concept of thriving instead of surviving. Do you meet a lot of people who are just sort of bumping along and doing what they need to do to get through every day, and maybe not even that much?
Absolutely, and especially like I see a lack of persistence with children. So I do a lot of motivational things to help them, eliminate procrastination and persist in their endeavors.
And what are some of the steps to convince people to turn away from just the basic survival skills into opening up to more of a full life approach?
A lot of it is balance right now in today's society. Parents balancing career and family obligations is a very difficult matter. And so just finding that balance in everything in life, whether it is your career and family or, even as a child, you need to find balance. I think a lot of the issues today's society is children are afraid to fail, and I think failure is a great thing.
A great thing in what sense?
Well, because you're not going to, you're going to experience failure sooner or later. So to allow your children to fail is a good thing. If you constantly protect them from it and then they fail when they're older, they have a more difficult time. I mean, if you go back in history, look at Edison. He didn't say that he failed 10,000 times. He said he found 10,000 ways a light bulb won't work. So to me, failure is only if you don't get back up and try again.
And how do a lot of parents approach this? I mean, is there a fair amount of A, insulating kids from failure, or B, criticizing them greatly when they do fail?
It depends, on the parent. I see a lot of parents constantly do their homework for their kids, and I discourage that. Allow them to fail. I'm not saying allow them to fail a grade, but it's okay to fail a test. It's okay to fail in a sport and pick them back up and show them, the goodness of it. To me, failure is a stepping stone to success. You learn from your failures, and that's how they're not clarified as failures.
You mentioned Edison already, and in fact, the chapter one starts with some names of people who were doubted, Edison among them. Einstein himself sounds like he was a bit of a problem child.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's many people in history. I mean, look at Ford, you know. I mean, there's so many that just realize that you just got to keep going. And that's what these kids, they fail at one thing and then they want to give up. So I try to turn that around.
And I think that the story that's told in there about Albert Einstein is that he was 4 years old before he actually uttered his first words and wasn't reading until he was 7 years old. Turn things around, obviously, but it sounds like some kids need time. Is that one of the messages here, is that parents need to realize that kids are going to work at different rates?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone's different. You have to discover what your children are good at, where are their strengths and where are their weaknesses, and you know, help them according to that.
All right, and there's a concept in here about who and what is manipulating your child's mind. Are we talking about deliberate manipulation or just ways in which kids get distracted and unfocused?
Well, I teach a lot about the conscious and the subconscious mind, but I also teach a lot about for parents to understand the developmental periods of a child's life. Once you discover what happens in those three periods, you can understand what is being impressed upon their subconscious mind, which produces their actions.
All right, much more to talk about with Peggy Caruso. She is an executive and personal development coach and the author of the book Revolutionize Your Child's Life, A Simple Guide to the Health, Wealth, and Welfare of Your Child. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Peggy Caruso, and your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. We'll return to the Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Peggy Caruso. She is an executive and personal development coach who certifies other life coaches as well. Her website, lifecoachingandbeyond.com. She's the author of a new book, Revolutionize Your Child's Life, A Simple Guide to the Health, Wealth, and Welfare of Your Child. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with comments or questions about things in guidance of children toward better futures. Our address on the Exchange, our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Our phone number, 800-838-3760, around the listening area, 800-838-3760. You were talking about the three different periods in a child's life, which you referred to as the imprint level, the modeling period, and the socialization period. Let's start, obviously, at the beginning with the imprint level. I mean, what's learned, it sounds like, between birth and six is what really sticks with a child.
Well, it's information that's absorbed from the environment. There's no critical factor in little children, so they have nothing to compare information to. You know, one of the things I put in my book is, like, if you tell your child when they first are learning that the sky's purple, they have no reason not to believe it because there's nothing to compare that information to. So you are very influential as to what you're placing into their mind at that period.
So the parents really are the ones who are doing most of the input here.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, all of that is absorbed into the subconscious mind.
I mean, some of it stays in the conscious too, doesn't it?
But your conscious is your reasoning mind. You know, that's you have the ability to accept or reject any thought at the conscious level. But however, once you accept it, then it goes into the subconscious mind, and that's what produces your action.
And so what are some of the things that people need to be aware of in terms of the stuff you do and don't want to make sure that your kid is exposed to during the imprint level?
Well, I encourage parents, like, when your subconscious mind never sleeps. So when your child's sleeping, whisper in their ear, you're smart, you're healthy, you're successful. I mean, these are things you want to really focus on, saying the positive things to your child during that time, you know, to make that their foundation, that they are going into life in a positive manner rather than a negative.
And they can hear those things while they're sleeping?
Absolutely. It goes into their mind. It's just like a hypnotherapy tape would. The script is a therapeutic part of a hypnotherapy session. And that's where you put the positive suggestions to help accelerate change.
Is there a particular parenting style that you think works best? I mean, you've been careful in the book to not talk about parenting very directly, but obviously there are some things you probably don't want to do with your kids when they're in the imprint level.
You be very careful what you say, and a lot of parents are negative, or this is where limiting beliefs start, where they hear you saying things like, money is the root of all evil or something like that. That's just a limiting belief. And so just try to think that whatever you're talking about and surrounded your child, that's what's going to be absorbed into them.
And do you have any particular opinions about types of playthings that are best for kids between birth and 6 years old?
Well, I talk about that a little bit in my book about, songs. Always pay attention to the lyrics of a song. You don't want anything that's bad to be absorbed into their mind. Same with movies. Same with books that they learn to read. Make sure that they're all positive.
And what about influences like screen time? Because kids today just love to have their little lit-up screens around them. So they got, the cell phone, the tablet, the TV. I mean, wall-to-wall screens pretty much in their lives.
Absolutely. You need to be careful. I have a lot of parents that will say, I'm going to keep technology away from my child to protect them. You have to let them advance with technology. You just have to do it safely. So I list a lot of things in my book about, precautionary measures that you need to take and, different things you need to do to protect your child.
And what particular age would you recommend then for introduction to screens?
That's a touchy situation. It depends on the parent. It depends, for instance, my grandson is 7. My daughter, I feel, does a very good job as far as she allows him technology, but she has it completely so that she has full control. But she also makes outside playtime, and that, so she really limits, she'll let him play a game, and then she takes it away and makes him do something productive as well. So I think that there, again, is about balance.
Is a time limit a good thing, you think, with screen time at younger ages?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of good things about technology. There's a lot of things to enhance academics, a lot of good math programs out there, a lot of good, reading, writing, English, all of those things. So make them learning things.
All right, let's move on from the imprint level to ages 7 to 14, the modeling period. And I'm actually, one of the questions I want to ask is about the changeover, the transition from one to the other. For example, if the disruptions are great enough in a child's life, does imprinting end early?
No. I believe, and I can base this on not just my education, but my experience. I have a lot of experience with children. And I would say, in the 90% percentile is where I see all the difficulties occur within the modeling period. And why that is because they break away from that family environment and they start modeling other people's behavior, whether it's other children, it's actors, actresses, teachers. And so, I have a lot of parents who say, how did I raise two kids exactly the same and they are complete opposite? That's because one child breaks away into one group of friends and the other child breaks away into another, and you have that influence of those other families as well.
So through age 6 or 7, they're really focusing on the people in their immediate circle, and then that circle just expands out as they reach the modeling period.
Absolutely. Curiosity sets in, and they start looking at things on TV and like I said, modeling that behavior. How many little children do you see around 8 years old and they're modeling, actresses and they want to look like them and spin around? And so it's a very crucial period, and the influences can be good or bad.
And how then, Peggy, would you advise parents to move in trying to make sure that they're guiding their kids toward decent models and instead of ones that they have some questions about? I mean, you want to make sure that you're respecting your kids' wishes, I'm sure, but also not trying to appear too heavy-handed at the same time.
Well, the key is to listen to them and study their behavior. A lot of parents will say, I don't know how this happened to me, I didn't see it. A lot of parents will think, well, my child's, doing really good academically and they spend a lot of time alone in their room, so I think they're just being a well-behaved child. Usually that is a sign that there's something wrong if they're spending a lot of time in their room. Just study them, and, at dinner is a great time to really listen, and you'll see if your child's behavior is changing in any way. That's when you have to start questioning things.
But, it's one thing to really listen. It's another thing if they're not really talking. I mean, if you're saying, so how was school today? And then get to fine. I mean, you have to pose the questions in a different way, which I've learned in this job as well. You have to ask a lot of hows and whys. But if kids aren't responding, how do you goose them into a greater level of communication than they are desirous of giving?
Well, that's the greatest question of all, because that's the area that I love the most. Is I think that a lot of communication, verbal communication, is lost because of social media and texting and all that sort of thing. So there's many, many things we can do, and we can touch on masterminding because that is a great way for a lot of different things to help your child communicate. But when they're little, when they're very little, send them in the morning, get them looking for something positive in school. So say, okay, dinner tonight, you need to find something that is so happy in school today that makes them go to school looking for something happy. And then it also elicits a response at dinner time to open that line of communication.
Now that you mention, I do know parents who insist that every night at dinner that everybody relate a good story, a bad story, and a neutral story.
I think that's a great idea.
And so they'll have something to talk about. We're talking to Peggy Caruso. She is the author of Revolutionize Your Child's Life, A Simple Guide to the Health, Wealth, and Welfare of Your Child. Your comments and questions are welcome on the Jefferson Exchange. Join the conversation at 800-838-3760 across the listening area, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I noticed that one of your fields of practice is hypnotherapy. What do you use this for with children?
It's really effective with children because I help a lot of kids get off their ADD, ADHD, and depression medication. And one of the ways to do that is calmness of mind. And whether it's my executive clients or my seven-year-olds, a hypnotherapy is so beneficial. People have a misconception of it. Don't be afraid of it. It's not a bad thing. It's not anything that could ever hurt you or your child. I do it on my own grandson. You know, it's just a way to get people to calm their mind. Executives are always thinking their minds are going a mile a minute because they're thinking about the bottom line and issues at work. And so it's a great way to get calmness of mind, and calmness of mind brings you calmness on the outside.
Is it always other directed by someone like yourself, or can they practice their own hypnotherapy by themselves? And does it ultimately become more like meditation in that process?
Well, I was just going to say, if they do it on their own, it's more meditation. What a hypnotherapy session is like you do an induction, which gets them relaxed, and then a deepening to get them deeper relaxed, and then a script, which is the therapeutic part. That's where you put the positive affirmations. Like, it's great for weight loss programs, smoking cessation, people, you know, who want to quit smoking and lose weight and stuff. It's very effective for that, very effective with children and ADD and ADHD. And so the therapeutic part of the script is where you implant the positive suggestions into their mind.
Which will be often, I mean, are they very specific sorts of things, or just general feel better about yourself sorts of things?
You have to know what you're doing. You have to know, like, the type of verbiage to use, things that are recognizable within the subconscious mind. So they're all positive. Everything that you implant is just positive messages.
And how different is the verbiage, come to think of it, when, you know, dealing with a seven-year-old, for example, versus an executive at a major corporation?
Well, you have to tailor it to the age. Like, I'm not going to use big terminology. If I'm working with a child, you're going to make it more childlike. But the bottom line is you're just going to implant the positive messages.
All right, we've talked about the two earlier periods, the imprint level, birth to 6, the modeling period, 7 to 14. Now we enter the socialization period, ages 14 to 21. Is this often the shakiest time in any person's life?
Well, it can be, and it doesn't have to be. If you see a problem with your child, I highly recommend a therapeutic intervention between the ages of 7 and 14 so that you can correct it by the socialization period. But the good way to look at that is I have people in here in their 60s that I change behavioral patterns. So you can always change anything. So even if things look really grim, you know, you can turn your child's behavior around. It's just a difficult period because this is where they become, you know, a lot of kids, you'll hear parents say, my child is out of control with their mouth. They're very disrespectful, that type of thing. That's what you're going to deal with in the socialization period.
And kids in this time can obviously be very hard on themselves as well as other people. Now, you suggest avoiding sabotage statements. What are those?
Well, a sabotage statement is where you say, like, I can't do that. I'll try. No, you can do this. You will do this. I mean, start getting your children to talk in more positive than more negative.
And how do you convince, though, a kid who's on a negative streak that positive phrases are not stupid or, you know, whatever the term they might choose to use about making positive statements themselves?
Well, one of the things I do is in teaching entrepreneurism in children, you know, you develop, you understand their skill set. So you want to find out what their talents and abilities are. Once you find out something that they really like and that they're good at, it's easier to implement positivity statements that way. And it just ends up turning it around so that they use it in other ways. So, I mean, there's tricks to it,
right.
But it does work.
Let us take a call. We have Vince in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peggy Caruso, the author of Revolutionize Your Child's Life. Hi, Vince.
Hi. I was wondering if the guest speaker could speak to the issue of young people coming to college or graduating from high school, and they have no idea what kind of work or career they want. I was a college counselor for 30 years, and I can tell you the thousands of students that I saw in their freshman year of college that had absolutely no idea what they wanted to do, and they didn't even know what kind of work their parents did. They never saw their parents' workplace. I think it's a major problem. I'm just wondering if there's anything that she's experienced that was helpful. And my other basic question is for us out here in the audience, what's the difference between life coaching and counseling?
All right, good questions, both. Thanks for those, Vince. Peggy?
Okay, the difference between life coaching and counseling is, well, first of all, you're certified, you're not licensed. It's more motivational, it's more you figure out what the problems are, just like a psychiatrist or psychologist were. You recognize what they are, but then we release them and move on in a positive manner. So a life coaching is you implement a lot more gratitude and motivational things in with it, and you have a plan of action. So it's you definitely do like goal setting, where a psychiatrist and psychologist wouldn't do that. They focus more on, okay, what is the issue of what is your underlying problem, where we recognize what the underlying problem is, but then we move everything forward in a positive manner. And your second question, or your first question, as far as children coming out of high school, going into college, I have a lot of students that have no idea what they want to do. And so I provide a skill set exercise, which I probably couldn't get into right now because it's very in-depth. But I have a line of questioning that I do with them to kind of figure out what their passions are, what their talents and abilities are, and then focus that with what, you know, what would interest them for the rest of their lives. A lot of kids will come in and say, well, I guess I got to go to medical school because my parent is a doctor. You don't have to do that. And I encourage parents, let them find their own passions. What are they good at? And then, you know, enhance those things to help them figure out what they want to do. I have a lot of college kids that I help figure that out.
Well, a step further back from the person who says, I guess I should go to medical school, is the person who says, I guess I should go to college, because that's how you make money in today's world. But, I mean, do you ever coach people to really think hard about whether they should be going to college now, for example, if they don't know for sure what they'd like to do?
Well, college isn't for everyone, and I know people cringe when you say that because you think, oh, you can't function in today's society with a good job unless you go to college. I'm not discouraging it, and I'm not encouraging it. It's not for everyone. I have some students who actually come to me, and we figure out talents and abilities, and they don't want to go to college, and they end up starting a small side career that gets them in the entrepreneurial mode. That's why I said it's, you know, teaching these things as in children makes them successful as adults. You know, I have parents who say, well, what if my child doesn't want to start a business? You use those entrepreneurial skills not just to start a business, but to be very good in your own career.
Well, that was another question then, because since you do focus on entrepreneurial ability, it's where you come from, and you do coach people in that range of skills. I mean, but are these still people who'd be happy working for other people as well?
Absolutely. Like I said, it's just because we use the word entrepreneur or entrepreneurism, it doesn't mean that you have to start your own business, but you can utilize those same types of skills to advance within a career. You know, like I've had 3 restaurants in my life, so I've had tons and tons of kids that graduated from college that can't get a job, and they end up working in the restaurant industry. But I did utilize my coaching there as well, and some of them did well in like the food industry. So it just depends.
And it's not all work, too. There's a great quote from somebody else in your book about play is a necessity, not a luxury for kids growing up. I mean, so how much time of their lives should be devoted to just play?
Well, there's no definite time frame or whatever. It's balance. I go back to balance because that's like my little coaching sign that you need balance within everything. But there are little things that you can do, even in children, that you start implanting some of those seeds. Like, let me give you an example. Christmas is a great time to do this.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Give a little time.
You know, teach them how to spend, save, and share, the three S's. And that's a good money tool.
All right, spend, save, and share. Christmas time is a great time to talk about that. Revolutionize Your Child's Life is the book. Peggy Caruso, the author. We'll come back and talk more with Peggy and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Peggy Caruso. She's an executive and personal development coach who certifies other life coaches. She's the author of several books. Her website is lifecoachingandbeyond.com. Her latest book, Revolutionize Your Child's Life, a simple guide to the health, wealth, and welfare of your child. We're talking about how to get people, young people, set on a path to success in life. Join us on the Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Peggy, I love the examples of people who pushed on to success. We've talked about Edison and Einstein, but I never heard the fact that Dr. Seuss was paid in nail clippers in his career.
Yes. and I threw that in there because, I have the entrepreneurial factor in it. You know, when we just took a break, we were talking about the three S's, spend, save, and share. I think this is a huge thing to implement, and in my book, I don't just direct this toward little children. I it's all through teenage years, and so you can utilize a lot of the things that I put in my book to help your child at any age.
And one of the things is visualization. This is a pretty simple concept, I would think. You need to see what you seek in your mind.
Absolutely, it's creative imagination, and it's so beneficial with goal setting. And everyone will say to me, like, I can't believe you teach goal setting to children. I think that's huge. I think short-term goals and long-term goals are something that you should implement, whether they're children or whether they're executives or at any age. And visualization, in order to do it effectively, you need calmness of mind. So that is why I teach everyone that you need to calm down, calm your mind, because once you get your mind calm, you can think clear, you're more productive, and the same goes with your children.
When kids are by themselves, what are some of the techniques you give them to calm their own minds when there's nobody else around to help them calm themselves?
A lot of it is taking your mind to the happy place. Close your eyes and rest your mind, and I try to get them to what is it that you want to become, and get them to focus and dream. Like we were taught as children, stop daydreaming. I think daydreaming is great. I think it's very, very beneficial for helping children.
You take it a step further with something called a vision board. And tell us about the vision board.
Vision boards are very popular. They're very common. A lot of older people use them, but I get kids doing it. And there's many, many different types of vision boards, but just take whether it's a cork board or a poster paper, and have them clip out things and do it even as a family. Like, what are some family vacations you would like to go to in the next 5 years? And put them on there. Let everybody constantly see them. A vision board is super, super beneficial if you're in a weight loss program because I make them find a picture of the weight they used to be and they want to be that weight again, and you stare at that picture every day. It's just something that helps them work toward their goal.
And I understand that you don't even need the poster paper because I found 5 free vision boards through Google.
Yeah. I mean, you can get fancy ones, but like I said, just a poster board. That's fine.
And visualization, you say in the book, helps kids with ADD, attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder?
Yep, and that's because I said calmness of mind. huge to get kids who are hyper, kids who just can't sit still. I mean, their minds are going. That's a huge part of that. They just can't sit still. They're thinking about what they want to do when they go home. So there again, you get calmness in your mind, then you get calmness in on the outside.
And I'm wondering about cases where kids have been through some emotional trauma, because you do reference that a bit in the book. But is there a point at which you say, you know, this is really not my kind of case? You really need to be with a real therapist. I mean, how do you divide those up, or do you?
Absolutely. I'm not someone who will take on every single case that I have. I think my ability to implement not just coaching techniques, but my NLP and hypnosis makes it more beneficial as a coach than just a normal life coach. So I want that clear. I do more than just the life coaching itself to be able, I don't think a regular life coach could help someone with ADD or ADHD. So it's just very important to understand behavioral patterns and then how to modify those things.
All right, the book is obviously primarily about kids, but I have to wonder if adults have a fairly tough time visualizing their desires, if they're the ones who probably need to be doing some vision boards themselves.
Absolutely, and calmness of mind is huge. And, you know, persistence, gratitude, there's a lot of good things in there, developing intuition. So I've had a lot of people who, actually I have a client of mine who's in her 50s and she doesn't have any little kids and she doesn't have any grandkids. And she read my book and she said, I just learned so much and I took a lot away from it, because she understood where some of her limiting beliefs are, or some of the things that she's seeing in her actions that she would like to change. She understands, because of the developmental periods, where they started.
She understands within her own life, you mean, where things went wrong in her life?
Yeah, and you know, so the things I talk about in the book, it helped her. My son is 26. He's not married. He doesn't have any children, and he took away a lot from the book, so...
You mentioned, obviously, you know, some of the reason that kids need to get on positive paths is because they're in fairly negative ones. You mentioned the frequent cases of kids who cut themselves. I mean, first of all, how young does this go, and what are the reasons often given by kids who do cut themselves?
That is a great question. Cutting is a huge issue in today's society. I have a lot of children in here who cut, and they cut as early as 8, 9, 10, you know, and into their teens. But what happens is, they internalize their emotions. They don't know how to release them. I always say, I'd rather have a child come in and throw themselves on the floor, kick and scream and get it out, and then we can move forward. But it's the one who holds it all in. They carry the burden of whether they're bullied or whether they are the bully. They carry in all these negative things, and they don't release it. So they take it out on their bodies. It's terrible how many kids do this.
And I'm struck by one of these case histories. It's the story of a young woman named Emily who talks about just wanting to be normal. And I'm curious about what makes somebody think they're not normal, particularly when so many other people would say, hey, you look perfectly normal to me.
Well, that's great, because Emily's one of my favorites. I love her. She talks about how much I've helped her. She was on depression medication, ADD medication for 5 years. I got her off in 4 months. When Emily first came to me, she was a senior. She comes from a phenomenal family who did pay attention, very good family. And she was in a very popular in school, great grades. She had cheerleader, and she was cutting herself, and nobody knew it. So I get her, you know, she didn't want to go to college, and she was very withdrawn. She's in college now. She's getting straight A's. She's very outgoing. So, you know, the coaching program does work, and it's just getting them to release those emotions is huge in cutting.
There's an interesting concept in here on moving forward, as Emily and lots of other people you've worked with have done. What do you mean, burn the boats?
Well, it goes back to the story of the warriors. Like, if you don't have any other, don't give them an option. Like, you just got to win or you're going to perish. Like that motivational, do you ever get that feeling inside, like, I can do this, you know? And that's one of the things, you know, tell them, you know, encourage them to keep moving forward. Like, it goes back to failure. A lot of people are afraid. You know, fear isn't real. It's something you create in your mind. So a lot of kids won't go forward because they have so many fears. Fear of failing. Some people have fear of success. So just teaching them to be motivated enough to pull forward, and you can get through anything.
This refers back to Greek warriors, doesn't it? They actually burned the boats behind them so they couldn't retreat.
Right. So you're either going to win the war or you're going to die. And so that's what you teach them, kids. Like, just go for it. Go, you know, you have nothing to lose. You can recover from failure. I've failed many, many times in my life. and you just get back up, brush it off, and keep rolling. It's when you stop is when, you know, you fail.
How do you get young clients, though, not to take that the wrong way and burn the bridges ahead of them rather than burn the boats behind them?
Well, it depends on the child. It depends on what their direction is that they're going. I use it as a motivational tool. Like I said, you know, children, the second that I see that, you know, oh my gosh, I failed the test, I can't go home and tell my mom, they're devastated. So teaching them that failure is not a bad thing is something that you all parents need to work on.
Have there been some really tough cases for you to crack, Peggy? I mean, people who came to you and sat in your office and just kind of stared at you and said, I'm only here because my mother wants me to be here, or something like that?
Yeah, and those are the difficult ones because, you know, if you want to be here, it's different. You're going to put more effort into it. If you have to be here, it's harder. So I have to sometimes use, you know, a different approach. I don't use the same approach with everyone. But getting these kids nowadays to be grateful is one of the biggest challenges because they don't seem to be grateful for a lot of things. But gratitude is huge because it enhances empathy and happiness. It builds character.
Why do you suppose gratitude does seem to be so lacking in kids?
Well, I think it's society has changed so much. I think, like I said, a lot of communication's lost. That's why I teach masterminding skills in children, because masterminding helps with problem solving and accountability. It reinforces communication and interpersonal relations. So I think it's a great tool to use to get your kids to communicate, to get them to be grateful, to help one another, and verbally communicate that.
We have an email here from Ariel, no town given. Ariel writes, I tuned in late at a point where you were discussing hypnotherapy. Doesn't submitting to hypnotism, even for beneficial purposes, make the person more open to suggestion and therefore more vulnerable to negative suggestions that could be used against them? That's again from Ariel and by email.
No. The hypnotherapy that I use is, like I said, you just provide a hypnotherapy script, which just gives positive messages. It has nothing to do with energy, and I guess I'm taking that that question as like you talk about the universal laws, the law of polarity, you know, opposites, the law of gravity. If you put a ball down, but if you have the law of vibration, it works. It coincides with energy. So if you have yourself in a negative energy flow, you're just more susceptible to negativity. But there's nothing negative about hypnotherapy. It's all a positive intervention.
It sounds very similar, then, to what you're talking about with whispering to your kids when they're asleep. It's pretty much the same sort of thing. We're building up the positives and getting a link to their unconscious or subconscious mind.
Absolutely. Do it to yourself every day. When you get up in the morning, look yourself in the mirror and say, what do you love about yourself? I mean, you have to love yourself on the inside before you can love yourself on the outside and vice versa. You know, tell yourself every day, I'm thin, I'm happy, I'm smart, I'm successful. I mean, those are great, positive messages.
Do you really have to take some baby steps with some kids? Not because they are babies, but because they're just not committed or convinced about the process. I mean, and rather than come up with, you know, big, bold affirmations, you have to give them little ones like, okay, I'm breathing today, or, you know, something maybe a little more than that. But you get my point?
I do. I'm very fortunate in the years that I've been doing this, the children that I have, I've developed a great rapport with. So that's a difficult question for me because every one of the children that I have are very receptive to anything that I tell them. We have a great rapport. And so I think the kids start seeing the positive results and I try to do things so that they'll start seeing positive results immediately.
You were talking about some of the laws just a moment ago. Is this a creation of Bob Proctor? I noticed that he's a foreword in your book. He's the creator of The Secret. Are these his laws that you're quoting that you just mentioned a moment ago?
He's the one I learned them from, yes. And I've lived by those. I mean, they make perfect sense to me. And the law of perpetual transmutation, that's energy. I mean, that is a universal law, and if you get yourself in a positive energy flow, it's going to coincide with the law of vibration. You are going to attract positive things. Do you ever notice when you get up in the morning and you stub your toe and you allow negativity, your whole day seems to go downhill unless you can turn it around?
Right. You get to work and somebody says, what's wrong with you? It's like, I stubbed my toe. Yeah, and?
I got caught in traffic. And
all right, all the things that go on from there. Well, it's not just these laws that you include in the book, but there's also a mention of faith. Faith as part of the growing and changing process. How important do you think that is?
I think faith is huge, whether it's, you believe in energy, the law of attraction, you believe in God, you believe in Buddha, it doesn't matter, just as long as you believe in a higher power and a power for good. Once children think that the parent is the highest power, they're doomed, because if they win over the parent, then they feel as though there's nothing else to be held accountable to. If you can instill some sort of faith, like I have children, I'm convinced I don't believe in God, I don't believe in heaven, and that's okay, but let's just work toward believing in something. So I get them to believe in energy, and it actually works. Usually when they're done, they do have a belief system in place.
It sounds like higher power in the Alcoholics Anonymous sense, where it's not necessarily a bearded deity, but just a power of something greater than yourself.
Absolutely, and something greater than the parent. So it's very beneficial for the parents to get their children to believe in something.
Peggy, tell us about the girl who made the happy wall. I'm curious about her and what went on her happy wall.
Oh, she did. She was so sweet. She did like post-it notes, and she would do positivity statements, or she would say, you know, this made me happy today, or Mom and I did this today, this made me happy. She would just, anytime something great would happen, she would put it on. She had a whole wall that she just made a happy wall. And it was nice. Her mom ended up putting a thing on the outside of the door, and they would just do positivity messages back and forth. Just anything to keep your kids focused in a positive way.
And moving ahead into the future, which we hope is a positive future, the book is called Revolutionize Your Child's Life, A Simple Guide to the Health, Wealth, and Welfare of Your Child. Peggy Caruso wrote it. She's an executive and personal development coach. Her website, lifecoachingandbeyond.com. Peggy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, good to have you.